Hello and welcome back to the History of the British Isles podcast. This is episode 47, Here Come the Picts. Welcome back. This week we'll be finishing off Scotland during the Roman period. Before we begin, I'd like to remind you all to follow me on Twitter, where I'm at BritishHistPod, and join the community Discord server. I'll link both of those in this episode's description. Also, please consider donating to the podcast via Patreon. Every donation gets put right back into the show. Speaking of Patreon, our first special episode will come up next week and will be on Emma of Normandy. If you don't want to donate every month, you can make a one-off donation via PayPal. To do that, go to paypal.me/BritishHistPod. If you donate £2.50 or more, you'll get a shout-out on the show. I'll link that in the episode's description. Also, for my 50th episode, I'll be doing a Q&A. It might just be a section of the episode, or it could take up the whole thing. If you want to send me questions, you can email me at historyofbritishisles@gmail.com or send me a message through Discord. One person's already done that. You could also tweet at me. Every single question I get will be answered in the episode as long as it's good-natured. Now, let's get on with the episode. We left off last episode with the introduction and then gradual phasing out of the Antonine Wall. The decline of the Antonine Wall was accelerated further when, in 192, there was a civil war across the Roman Empire known as the Year of the Five Emperors. The result of this was the defeat of the erstwhile Roman governor of Britannia, Decimus Clodius Albinus, by Septimus Severus. Severus put in place a new governor of Britannia, Virius Lupus, who was tasked with quelling Albinus' supporters. However, Virius had a bigger problem than merely some pesky Albinus supporters. He faced a Caledonian invasion. Cassius Dio records, and I quote, "Inasmuch as the Caledonians did not abide by their promises and had made ready to aid the Maetae, Lupus was compelled to purchase peace with the Maetae for a great sum, and he received a few captives. Basically, Virius Lupus was forced to pay off the Maetae and the Caledonians, who had recently launched a joint invasion of Roman Britain, of which he didn't have the resources to properly resist. The Romans in Britain were generally weak after the deposition of Albinus, and this event probably marked the final Roman withdrawal to Hadrian's Wall. However, the Romans were fully out of the fight. In 208, Septimius Severus arrived in Britain and invaded Caledonia. Severus' invasion was largely a failure due to the mountainous terrain of Scotland and guerrilla tactics employed by the Caledonians. He was able to, at least on paper, make the Caledonians cede territory to Rome. However, that probably didn't end up taking place. 2 years later, in 210, the Caledonians and Maetae revolted. Severus was still in Britain along with his sons. However, the old emperor was ill and one of his sons, Caracalla, was tasked with putting down the rebellion. It's likely Severus planned military actions himself and just ordered Caracalla to do his bidding. What this resulted in was an extermination campaign perpetrated by the Roman army. This was more successful than the first campaign. However, Severus died sometime in late 210 or early 211, which resulted in his sons seeking peace and abandoning the gains they had made. Severus's death marked the beginning of the crisis of the 3rd century, a period of increased pressure on the empire. Now, let's go on to the Picts. We'll be jumping forwards a solid 70 years, but that's just because nothing Scotland-related really happened. In 297, we get the first mention of the Picts along with the Hiberni, an Irish tribe which we'll start to see pop up as an accomplice to the Picts. The Picts were portrayed as enemies of the civilised Romano-British people. This is evident in the word Pict itself, which meant painted people. On the surface, this is pretty mundane. It's used to describe the Roman claim that the Picts painted symbols and animals on their body. We don't know whether this is a natively adopted term or something the Romans called them. However, if the Romans did attribute the name, it may have had an ulterior meaning. In Roman society, the only people who were tattooed were the lowest of the low, slaves, criminals and rebels. Calling the Picts painted, or tattooed, people equated them with these lowlifes. However, it could have just been a native term the Picts adopted. Anyways, Throughout the 3rd century, the empire was relying more and more on barbarian and provincial recruits to guard its borders. There was also a centralisation of military jobs in family. If your father was a soldier and you lived near the border, you'd probably become a soldier defending the same border. What this meant was that soldiers had less of an allegiance to the empire than they did to their local area. Gone were the days of a cosmopolitan military force or Italian-dominated armies. What this also meant was that troops had more of an allegiance to their commanding officer. The effect this had was revolts becoming more and more common in Britain over the course of the 3rd century. One particularly poignant example is that of the general Carausius, who declared himself emperor in 286. This was, for a sense of how common these revolts were, only 6 years after a previous feared revolt. Carausius was also unusual in the fact that he was contented with Britain and a few continental ports to secure his control of the Channel. This meant he had a good run and ended up dying at the hands of his own treasurer, Electus, in 293. Electus was able to hold out as ruler of Britannia for 3 years before the general Constantius put an end to his rebellion. Through all this, control of the northern border had weakened to the points where the Picts could raid with impunity. Roman puppet rulers also lost the flow of goods with the empire, causing them to become increasingly dissatisfied with Roman rule. In 306, Constantine, son of Constantius, declared himself emperor in Eboracum, modern-day York. Unlike pretty much every other British usurper, Constantine actually won, and in 324 controlled the entire empire. Constantine was the first Christian emperor of Rome and paved the way for the religion to spread into Britain. However, it wouldn't be till after Rome that the Picts went Christian. Constantine's reign also saw the change of Roman military tactics against the Picts. After 340, Roman strategy became more and more defensively focused and reactive to Pictish attacks. Gone were the days of Severus's casual genocide. In 360, this new tactic was put to the test. Ammianus Marcellinus records, "The wild tribes of the Scoti and the Picts broke their undertaking to keep the peace, and laid waste to the county near the frontiers, and caused alarm among the provincials." The Scoti mentioned here were an Irish tribe who would later settle in Scotland. It's possible they had already done so and invaded by land alongside the Picts. However, it's equally likely they came from Ireland by sea. The Picts themselves may have even chosen to invade by sea. The Roman general Lupicinus was sent to deal with the invasion, and he was able to push the Scoti and Picts out of Roman-controlled Britain. However, he took no punitive actions against the invaders. It's at this point where something quite weird happens. In 367, Ammianus Marcellinus recorded that, and I quote, "Britain was being reduced to direst need by a barbarian conspiracy. This was a big deal. Nectardius, the commander of coastal Britannia, was killed by Germanic raiders with the Dux Britannorum. The overall commander of Roman forces in northern Britain, Philophides, was captured by the Picts. Rome was being attacked on all fronts across the empire." This led them to suspect a conspiracy between the tribes. However, it probably wasn't that simple. The attackers were disparate, so communication would have been challenging. There was likely an alliance between the tribes of Scotland and Ireland. The Britain invaders were aided by the treachery of the Icani, Roman intelligence gatherers who worked north of the border. In Ammianus' list, the tribe involved, at least on the British front, as being the Picts, who he divides into the Diclodoni and the Veretunes, and the Scoti, who we've already talked about, and the Attacotti. The third group is a bit of a mystery to us. Their territory is unknown, as all Ammianus gives us about them is that they were a warlike nation of men. Mark named Jerome gives us a bit more, although even he doesn't tell us where they were from. "I saw the Attacotti, a British tribe, eat human flesh. It is their custom to cut off the buttocks of shepherds." Jerome doesn't tell us much more, and he's an unreliable source, but I just had to include that quote. Jerome further records that shepherds' buttocks were regarded as a delicacy. Anyways, enough immature quotations. The tribes raided deep into Britain, looting and pillaging every town they could get their hands on. They were aided by the Saxons and Franks, who attacked all by land and sea. This meant no Roman reinforcements could get to Britain. Eventually, the Roman general Theodosius was able to get troops through to Britain. He defeated the invaders and restored Roman control of towns while strengthening the forts. This led to a total solidifying of the border, cutting off the tribes living north and south of Hadrian's Wall. way into Rome's final decline. As you might expect, the Picts had a hand in it. However, as you'll see, Rome really brought it upon themselves if we're being completely honest. In 383, Magnus Maximus, a British usurper, took his army to Gaul to lay claim to the imperial throne. In doing so, he removed large parts of the army from the northern border. Defence was delegated to the less well-trained Limitae, who basically brought a defence militias. The Romans supplemented the Limitae with Germanic Fodivati. The Fodivati were basically mercenaries. Gildas records, "After that, Britain was despoiled of her entire army, her military resources, her governors, brutal as they were, and her sturdy youth, who had followed in the tyrant's footsteps, never to return home." This tyrant is, as Bede names him, Vortigern. It is possible that he was, in fact, Magnus Maximus. It does make a bit of sense. Magnus did lead an army to Europe and was defeated. Thus, he explained the whole bit about the sturdy youth never returning home. After around 400, we stopped seeing coins in the archaeological record. It seems Rome couldn't afford to pay its troops in Britain while facing a military and economic crisis back on the continent. The armies were also shrinking further. Another rebel emperor, Constantine III, who could also be Gildas's tyrant, hopped over to the continent and took what was left of the armies with him. Of course, all this was good news for the Picts. Raiding Britain was easy work. In 410, the leading men of Britain supposedly requested imperial troops. However, embattled from all sides, the Emperor Honorius said they had to fend for themselves. Effectively, this cast Britain from the Emperor. However, Honorius' letter could have been intended for Bruttium, modern Calabria. The sentiment is still there, however. Britain was left to fend for themselves. Tim Clarkson names the end of the Roman withdrawal as 420, and this resulted in the native elites assuming control of administration. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I know that the last section was a bit Anglo-centric, but it's crucial to set up the post-Roman period. The Picts will be diving into the now chaotic Britain. However, that will be in 2 weeks. Next time, it will be a special episode about Emma of Normandy. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll know that my pop filter arrived this week, but it was too big for my desk. I've ordered a smaller one, so expect that in a week or two. If you want to get updates like that, please follow me on Twitter, where I'm at BritishPod. While you're at it, please also join the community Discord server. As ever, links for both of those will be put in this episode's description. If you have a spare minute, please leave the show a review. We just got to 149th on the UK's history podcast charts, and your reviews can help us climb even higher. If you want to support the podcast monetarily, you can give us a one-off donation through PayPal or make a recurring donation through Patreon. The latter gives you a few rewards for your money. I'll leave links to both of those in this episode's description. A big thank you to my one PayPal donor this week, Richard Hines, and both of my $10 Duchess tier patrons, Anita Gardoni and Stephen Reinish. Richard also makes a podcast about Persian history after Alexander, called the King of Kings podcast, so give that a listen. Also, please remember to send in your questions for the Q&A. With that, goodbye.